Please listen carefully.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the OMG Cyber Podcast, a cybersecurity podcast with a different perspective. And shock horror, no sponsor ads at all. That's right, no adverts, just chat, interviews, news, views, and clues about all things cybersecurity from yesteryear, today, and even the future. My name is Martin Overton and I will be your host. I have over 30 years of hands-on cybersecurity experience, including over 30 years of combating malware, that's worms, trojans, viruses, etc., and ransomware, over 15 years of doing ethical hacking, including social engineering, also known as hacking the human, and over 10 years doing digital forensics and incident response. From dealing with web defacements, cybercrime, right through to nation-state actors and APTs. As usual, you can get in contact with us via Twitter at @OMGCybersec, via our website at omgcybersecurity.co.uk, where you will find a contact form and actual telephone numbers, or you can leave us a message via the Anchor FM app. Please leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts from, so that we know if you like what you hear, and if not, tell us how we can make it better, apart from getting rid of the host, of course. Just a quick apology here for those of you that have been listening, certainly for episode 1 and episode 2. Certainly episode 2, the audio quality was not as good as it could have been. I have actually made some changes, significant changes, with my infrastructure and how I record. So hopefully you'll notice for this particular episode and going forward that the quality is significantly better. If you still have issues with it, please let me know. I'm happy and keen to actually provide the best product I possibly can. Thank you. Coming up in this episode, we have the usual housekeeping section, then it's on to breaking news, and then in the main part of the show, I'm going to cover sextortion. What it is, how it works, and what the bad guys and girls are getting out of it, and how, most importantly, how you can protect yourself. Then it's question of the day, and today's question tries to answer, what is social engineering? After that, it's our regular amble along acronym avenue, and I cover what SEAM and SOAR is, and what the difference between them. All this and more coming up. Hello, housekeeping! Nothing much new to report on the housekeeping side this week. However, I have had, again, some very, very nice feedback from quite a number of listeners. Thank you very much. It's very much appreciated. And I may have also found some willing victims. Oh, sorry, I mean guests that might want to come on the show. So keep your ears peeled for that. Hopefully, within the next few episodes, I will have at least one person, if not two people, actually on the show. If you'd like to be a guest and you're feeling adventurous or reckless or whatever, feel free to contact me and let me know. Breaking news! One of the stories this week I saw in the news that caught my eye was the fact that apparently Fin6, which is one of the big cybercrime gangs, is actually been linked to Ryuk and also Locker Gogger. Now, Fin6 are probably best known for doing lots of card data stealing and compromising point of sale systems. So this is quite a turnaround for them. And those of you that were paying attention and actually have been with me since episode 0.5, the teaser, will remember that I covered Locker Gogger during that episode. This is the one that hit North Hydro earlier this year. So it was worth going back and actually having a listen to that to find out exactly what was going on and just how badly they were hit. Another article that caught my eye as well was in regards to last week's episode, funny enough, about when I was talking about credential stuffing. Now, according to Dark Reading, credential stuffing attacks behind 30 billion login attempts in 2018. Now, the source for this particular report is Akamai. They claiming that using email addresses and passwords from compromised sites, attackers most often targeted retail sites, video streaming services, and entertainment companies. The Akamai report goes on to state that the popularity of credential stuffing attacks is also driven by easy-to-use software. there's a tool named Sniper, that's S-N-I-P-R. It's a popular entry-level program for targeting the simplest targets, such as gaming networks and video streaming services. They also mentioned another tool known as Storm. Now, this allows for custom configurations that are traded and sold on the dark web. So, you know, the bad guys are actually actively trading and selling these particular configurations to facilitate credential stuffing. Akamai goes on to say that they actually urge companies to continue to educate users on the reasons for using unique passwords paired with a password manager, and that users should request two-factor authentication wherever a service offers the security measure. And they actually are quoting here as saying, when discussing attack takeovers and all-in-one scripts, criminals often complain about the use of multi-factor authentication, which is a particularly effective method of stopping most of their attacks. So, you know, please, 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 where you can, enable two or multi-factor authentication, use unique passwords, and use a password manager. You can obviously find more detail and listen to episode 2, which is all about passwords and password management, as well as two-factor and multi-factor authentication. That includes information about credential stuffing too. One other item that caught my eye was regarding insurance. So some of you may remember that in episode 1, I talked about insurance and a lot of the misinformation that's going around. Now, a group of insurers, including Allianz, AXA, Axis Capital Holdings, Beazley, CFC Underwriting, Munich Re, Sompo, Zurich Insurance, and Marsh, have actually got together and come up with a new program, which they're calling Cyber Catalyst. Now, I'm not going to go into any detail here because not everybody's interested in insurance, and I can't quite understand why. But there's a big problem with this particular program that they're suggesting, which is basically a rating system. Now, I don't understand why insurers should be doing rating on security tooling. There are plenty of other companies out there that are far more geared up and respected for doing this type of rating. I don't think it adds any real value, but I will probably put together a blog posting about this in the next week or so. So keep your eyes peeled on my website. Are you sitting comfortably? Do you have your popcorn? This is the main part of the show. Let's go. So at the start of the last quarter of 2018, I started hearing a lot about sextortion emails. However, these are not a new phenomena. Many are now receiving them, and I was feeling a little bit left out as I hadn't received a single one of that new campaign. That was until the other day. So I received a sextortion email, my very first one, on the 11th of October 2018. It included what it claims is not only my email address, but also my user ID and password for the site they claim that I accessed. So let me read it to you. It says, "It seems that blah is your password. You may not know me, and you're probably wondering why you got this email, right? Actually, I set up a malware on the Adult Vids porno website, and guess what? You visited this site to have fun, you know what I mean. Whilst you were watching videos, your internet browser started out functioning as an RDP remote desktop, having a keylogger which gave me accessibility to your screen and webcam. After that, my software program obtained all of your contacts from your Messenger, FB as in Facebook, as well as email. What did I do? I backed up your phone, all the photo, video and contacts. I created a double screen video. First part shows the video you were watching. You've got good taste, haha. And second part shows the recording of your webcam. What exactly should you do? Well, I think $800 is a fair price for our little secret. You'll make the payment by Bitcoin. If you do not know this, search how to buy Bitcoin in Google." And it then gives a BTC address, a Bitcoin address, and it says it's case sensitive, so you should copy and paste it. And then it goes on to say, "Important, you have one day in order to make a payment. I have a unique pixel in this email, and at this moment I know that you have read through this email message. If you do not get the Bitcoins, I will certainly send out your video recording to all your contacts, including relatives, co-workers, and so on. Having said that, if I receive the payment, I'll destroy the video immediately. If you need evidence, reply with yes, and I will send out your video recording to your 6 contacts. It is a non-negotiable offer. That being said, don't waste my personal time and yours by responding to this message. So most of you are thinking, well, should I be worried, panic and pay up? Well, of course not. Why? Well, the credentials, the user and ID and password are ancient and lifted during one of the many data breaches over the last 10 years. And in my case, I don't visit porn sites. Yes, really, I don't. There is no video. It's all a bluff to get you to panic and pay up just in case. I stopped using Facebook a while ago. In fact, I closed my account and requested all my data to be deleted weeks ago, well before I got this first sextortion email. I've been working in anti-malware and malware analysis for over 30 years, and I'm used to catching and analysing new malware. Guess what? There is no malware on my systems unless I put it there to analyse it in a safe environment. There is no unique pixel in the email. It's just pure, plain ASCII text. No graphics, no HTML, no scripting, no risk. They do not know if you've received or read the email. There isn't even a receipt request in the email. The Bitcoin address is not unique. It is used for the whole sextortion email campaign. So they have no way to see if you've paid or not. This is how many modern ransomware attacks and DDoS extortion attempts work. They have no intent in giving you back your data or actually carrying out any DDoS attack or disclosing so-called data they have on you. It's all about getting you to believe in what they are telling you so that you can make they can make lots of money by frightening you into paying up. And I go on to say, at the time of publishing this article, because this is from a blog that I have on my site, over 5 days have elapsed, so my pay-up deadline had expired. And guess what happened? Nothing. Nada. Zilch. Absolutely nothing happened. What a surprise. I put another update again on the 8th of December 2018, and it said quickly stated that there were new more campaigns, and a few of them are now starting to get more Bitcoin payments, but others are getting almost nothing. In fact, since that time, most of the sextortion campaigns have been getting almost no money into their Bitcoin wallets whatsoever. Hopefully the word is getting out and less people are falling for this. Well, I can hope. A new twist, but not unexpected, that sextortion scammers are now including links to booby-trapped websites and files that contain malware, mainly ransomware at the moment, but this will change. This means that clicking on any of the links in these sextortion emails is now far more dangerous. Just delete the email or report it. Don't click on any links in them, not even how to buy Bitcoin. You are risking a lot of things by doing so. And if you actually check my blog article, you'll see there's actually a screenshot of Bitcoin wallet activity for this going from the middle of September through to about the end of the first week in December. And I'm still monitoring these Bitcoin wallets, and to be quite honest, not seeing a lot of activity in the sense they're not making any money out of it. There was a further update I posted on the 18th of March 2019, just recently, because a new version has started to circulate, this time claiming to be from the CIA, yes, the Central Intelligence Agency, accusing you of accessing child pornography, of all things. Now, that's obviously more worrying than just potentially looking at other normal porn. I'm naming this new variant Pextortion, because obviously they're suggesting that you're looking at child pornography, so they're accusing you of being a paedophile. There's a screenshot on my site for it, but I'll sort of walk you through what's actually there. So in the example I've seen, the email claims to come from Jacqueline Clevenger, jacquelineclevenger@nhfl.cia-gov.nml. Now, this is a forged email address anyway. It's not a real CIA email address. The subject is Central Intelligence Agency case number 51934672. And it goes on to say, distribution and storage of pornographic electronic material involving underage children. My name is Jacqueline Clevenger, and I'm a technical collection officer working for the Central Intelligence Agency. It has come to my attention that your personal details, including your email address, victim email address, are listed in case number 51934672. The following details are listed in documents attached. Your personal details, home address, work address, list of relatives and their contact information. Case number 51934672 is part of a large international operation set to arrest more than 2,000 individuals suspected of paedophilia in 27 countries. The data which could be used to acquire your personal information, your ISP web browsing history, DNS query history and connection logs, deep web onion browsing and or connection sharing, online chat room logs, social media activity logs. The first arrests are scheduled for April the 8th, 2019. Why am I contacting you? I read the documentation and I know that you are a wealthy person who may be concerned about reputation. That's very kind of her. I'm one of several people who have access to these documents and I have enough security clearance to amend and remove your details from this case. Here is my proposition. So we're getting to the bit now where I'm just going to start asking for money. Transfer exactly $10,000, $10,000, about 2.5 bitcoins through Bitcoin Network to this special Bitcoin address. And obviously there's a Bitcoin address there. You can transfer funds and online Bitcoin exchanges such as Coinbase, Bitstamp, or CoinMama. The deadline is March the 27th, 2019. I need a few days to access and to edit the files. Upon confirming your transfer, I will take care of all the files linked to you and you can rest assured no one will bother you. Very kind of her. Please do not contact me. I will contact you and confirm only when I see the valid transfer. Regards, Jacqueline Clevenger, Technical Collection Officer, Directorate of Science and Technology, Central Intelligence Agency. Now, where you see victim email address, that will be your email address that you receive the pextortion for. So, you know, I've actually got on in the blog, I've actually got an IP address you might want to blacklist, which will potentially stop a lot of these from getting through. Again, I'm tracking the Bitcoin wallets linked to this new campaign, and I've seen absolutely no money go through there whatsoever. So this is, again, not looking to be particularly helpful. This assumes, of course, that they are actually using the same Bitcoin wallet for a whole campaign. Now, from my discussions with other security researchers, that appears to be the case. So they are not making any money out of this at all at the moment, but it is obviously quite frightening for those who receive them and don't know what to do. However, sextortion is a growing crime wave and victims do fall for it. So if we look at some of the statistics, you can see just how bad it can be and what you should do if you receive such a threat. So these are my sort of guidance for you. So what is sextortion? It's basically you being blackmailed by cybercriminals that claim they have got hold of explicit material of you or one of your children, including photos, video, chat, text messages, etc. So how common is it and who are the main victims? Well, over 1,304 reported cases in 2017, up from 425 in 2015. Although the number is likely to be significantly higher as many of these crimes go underreported. This is just the UK, not globally, and it is a global scam. The target is usually male, in their teens or 20s, although some girls have also been targeted. How do they work? Victims are usually groomed for weeks and months before the blackmail attempt, where they are actually genuine sextortion ones, where they do actually have material. Often this happens via fake social media accounts or via targeted phishing emails. Occasionally this may start with a video call such as via Skype. Many are just scams where they have no data or video of you or your family member. So, you know, if you're not sure, treat it as suspicious. Don't do anything. What should you do? Don't panic. For a key thing there, don't panic. Don't pay, because you're only funding cyber criminals. Call the police. Sextortion is a criminal act. It is a form of blackmail, which is illegal. Don't contact the blackmailers. Stop all communications. So what are the costs? Well, the amounts can actually vary between £300 and £3,000. And we know that at least five males have taken their own lives due to being a victim of this type of blackmail or extortion. So it is really quite a bad thing out there. You need to be very, very careful. So you need to stay safe and educate yourself about the risks and the ways to reduce your own attack surface. That will make it harder for the bad guys and girls to succeed. And if you receive these types of emails, unless you know for certain you've been doing something you shouldn't have been doing, maybe being in a chat with somebody in Skype, in a compromising position, then you can just basically safely ignore it. Another update on this. So in the last few days, I've actually become aware of a new variant that's going around that appears to have a password protected zip file attached with no password, allegedly showing evidence. Now, of course, you can see the actual folders within there and the file names within the zip file, but you can't actually open them. So this is another way of the bad guys trying to prove they actually have data on you. It's, again, just a smokescreen. I'm not aware of anybody who's actually managed to brute force the zip file and actually break the password on it. If you have, please let me know and please get in contact with me. Question of the day. So this episode's question of the day is, what is social engineering? So let's put this in its simplest terms. Social engineering is using the inherent human tendency to trust others. This includes trusting people that claim authority or an existing relationship with you, such as business or personal. This is what the bad guys and girls take advantage of. They also use psychological triggers such as fear, hate, pity, greed, and of course, sex, to help them hook you and reel you in. I call it hacking the human, or if you liken it to other threats, you have hardware, computers and other devices, software, applications, etc. And then there is wetware, the human element, sometimes referred to by support staff in logs where the person is the cause of the issue as a PEBCAC issue. Problem exists between keyboard and chair, or even it's an ID10T call. I'll let you work that one out yourself. Just note that the 10 is numerical. Let me give you some examples. An actual email from a bank or claiming to come from a bank. This is an example of a social engineering attack that I was actually asked to do against a company as an ethical hacker. So I sent an email to key members of this particular organization's staff claiming to come from their bank and saying there'd been a problem with the bank and they needed to revalidate their credentials by logging in. Now, obviously, I had a fake website set up, which the link went to. And when the person actually clicked on that link, they got a page that looked just like their bank site because I did a very, very nice job of that. And then they entered in their credentials, their user ID and their password. Now, these were the real user ID and the real password for a bank account that at any one time had in excess of £10 million in it. Needless to say, a few moments later, I got the notification that they'd actually logged it. They'd actually logged into my fake website. I now had their credentials to this bank account with in excess of £10 million in it. Of course, I didn't log into the bank account and I didn't move any money. I am an ethical hacker. So, you know, that is a good example of how easy it is. Now, obviously, talking about the stuff we've talked about before, two-factor authentication, talked about that in the last episode, and password managers, that would have actually stopped that attack. Two-factor authentication, because I would not have had the second factor of authentication without actually socially engineering that information out of the target. Or you might get an example for a phone call from the police or the HMRC, the tax man. They tend to usually come to you and say that you have to pay a fine right now or you'll be arrested, etc. They often want paying in iTunes or other gift cards, and that really should be a big red flag to you and tip you off that the call is not genuine. You might get a call from your ISP, your internet service provider, from Microsoft, from BT, you know, the telephone company, etc., telling you that you have a virus or have been infecting other systems, and that if you give them access to your computer, they can fix it for you remotely. Well, of course, it's a scam. They really just want access to your system to either find personal detail which they can steal or to actually really infect it or make out they've actually found stuff on your computer that you need fixing and then charge you. And then, of course, they'll expect you to give your credit card details to them over the phone. So what can you do to actually protect yourself? Well, the first thing you can do, of course, is be skeptical. Be very skeptical of anything. Just because it says it comes from a trusted source doesn't mean it really has done. And then don't panic. Don't be forced into doing something. Don't do a knee-jerk reaction. And there's some very nice videos out there that have been created by Jenny Radcliffe that cover many of these of the right things to do and how to avoid falling for a lot of these social engineering attacks. I'll put a link in the show notes. So there you have it. Now you know what social engineering is. Let's take an amble down Acronym Avenue. So this episode, you're going to get a twofer. That's two for the price of one. This episode's acronyms are SIEM and SOAR. SIEM, that is S-I-E-M, is a security information and event management tool. And SOAR, S-O-A-R, is a security orchestration, automation and response tool. What are the differences? Well, SIEM looks after things like logs from firewalls, network appliances, malware defenses, endpoint protection, data loss prevention, and intrusion detection and prevention systems. These all generate huge amounts of data, event logs, analytics, etc. This ends up causing a data deluge or a tsunami that security teams or a SOC, a security operations center, usually struggle to interpret and make meaningful decisions on. Aseem collates all this data and attempts to make sense of it by aggregating, collating it all, and then using context and analytics to identify, categorize, and analyze incidents and events, effectively trying to rate threats, events, etc., by order of seriousness or risk. It then alerts on the things that need further investigation and or a remediation. Even with this serious amount of automation built into most SIEM offerings, there is still a huge amount of work required to tune it to a specific infrastructure and get meaningful data out of it. This can waste a significant amount of time which is really needed by those trying to use the tool that should really be focusing on triaging potential threats, risks and breaches. So let's move on to SOAR. So what is SOAR? Like SIEM, SOAR is designed to help security teams manage and respond to endless alarms at machine speeds or near machine speeds. SOAR is an evolution, not a revolution, of SIEM. It takes things further by combining comprehensive data gathering, case management, standardization, workflow, and analytics to provide an organization the ability to implement sophisticated defense in depth capabilities. SOAR's biggest benefit to a SOC is in the way that it can automate or orchestrate many time-consuming, including things like opening a ticket in a tracking system, without requiring any human intervention or any manual activity whatsoever. This allows the SOC analysts to better use their specialized skills rather than be bogged down with basic tasks. So now you know what SIEM and SOAR are. Well, that's all, folks, for this episode. I hope you enjoyed it or at least found it useful. Please leave a review on whichever podcast platform you use, as it does help others to find us. Thank you in advance. Stay safe out there. Ta-ta for now.